This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
They're an arrogant, ingrown, close-knit brotherhood like the Mafia. They're the product of a sick society. To hell with tomorrow. Their bag is today. Their bag is right now.
Welcome to Ben and Woods.
Oh, the hair on my neck just straight up.
With Ben Higgins.
Thank God all these bottles I popped. All this paper I've been getting. All these models I popped.
Stephen Woods.
It's my job to pull that demon out of Ben Higgins. And I will do it.
And Paul Reindel.
Oh, my God.
It's Ben and Woods.
Oh, I do. It's the last thing to do.
On 97.3 The Fan.
Yeah,
halfway home on a Thursday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. It's just excruciating to watch Adam eat those beans, and he ate a ton of them. Props to him. That was a lot of disgusting beans from the Bean Boozled tin. That are they're old, they're stale. Got them Christmas time.
The question now is, like, can we check back with him in 3 or 4 hours?
Yeah, to see he's going to taste it. He's going to taste it. You had the rotten eggs or the. Yeah, what was the one you got? The fish.
Fish, dead
rotten fish.
Fish,
and it stayed with you all day.
I didn't even want lunch or dinner.
Yeah.
It ruined my appetite.
It's SD fat loss.
That's true.
The real way to do it is to eat one
like
of those.
Like those old 70s appetite suppressant pills.
Yes, yes. Yeah, just take one of those. You really don't. I had a pretty either the rotten eggs one or something, and it was nasty. Stayed with me all day.
And the man asked for more.
He asked for more, like a psychopath. Well, listen, he's got the clout, and you drink it in when you're in the spotlight.
So the reason he was eating the beans, of course, is because he promised to do so if and when the Padres swept a series.
Got one.
Now, we were told more than once by the manager, Mike Shildt, who we'll talk to tomorrow, from the Big Apple at 9 a.m. in our manager's report. Sweeps aren't that important. Series wins are the thing that he's driving for.
But wait, did he actually say sweeps aren't important?
He didn't say they aren't important, but he certainly downplayed
which is what you do when you win a series
and that is my point, because if you heard Jackson Merrill right after the game with our Sammy Levitt on the postgame show, he said specifically, we really needed to finish off one of these sweeps.
Yeah.
It was important that we actually do that. What, I've been saying for months, and every time, Mike Shildt's going, no, you can't expect sweeps. This is baseball. Every team's good. You win a series, you're doing your job. I never disputed that. But I said, if you don't ever sweep a series, you're making the job too tough. You have to win two. When you get swept three times, you have to win 9 series to make up for that. You see my point?
Yes.
If you get swept in 3-3 game series, as the Padres had been, that's 0-9. To go 9 games above 500, you have to take 2 out of 3 9 times to offset the 3 sweeps. You're just putting yourself in an impossible position. 1 sweep down, very important. And Jackson Merrill acknowledged that after the game, that the sweep was something they were, in fact, thinking about. It was important to them. And they did attack that knowing this is something we have to be able to do. So it was probably worth a handful of beans there from Adam Klug.
Yeah, for sure. But again, like you asked the skipper after you dropped the third game of a series in which you won, what is he going to say? I would say the same damn thing, and you would say the same thing. If you were the skipper of the San Diego Padres, you'd be in there going, no, guys, we just won the series. What are we crying about? It's exactly what you say.
It's true. As long as you occasionally do win one or two of those sweeps, you're not going to complain about series wins.
But
if
Shildt,
you never sweep a series, it becomes a problem.
But with Shildt, it's, I can see why you say it was a little bit downplayed. But again, that's kind of what you say, man. That's exactly what you say. No, we won the series, and you know, would love to finish that one off, you know, obviously, and feel like we were in a good position to do it. We just didn't get it done.
The other thing that was downplayed publicly, but maybe not as much privately, and I just read this in the UT newsletter this morning. Remember how you know, Mike Schilt and players said, Tanner Bogaerts, hey, it was the prettiest 5-game losing streak ever. We played pretty good ball. Yeah. Just happens in baseball. Just found out that at the fifth game of that losing streak, the Padres did call, in fact, a team meeting.
I think I tweeted it the night before.
To discuss what was and was not going well. Joe Musgrove said the effort on everyone's part now is way better. Okay, that implies that maybe the effort wasn't what it needed to be before maybe said team meeting. So they got together, they discussed some things. You know, it's not like they went right on the winning streak. They split four with the Diamondbacks. But now, you know, they've won a few games. They've climbed back 2 games above 500. So there was perhaps some behind-the-scenes urgency that they were not publicly expressing to the rest of us during that 5-game losing streak. Publicly, everything's fine. No reason to panic. Love this team. Everything's going to be okay. Privately, all right, let's make sure that we're all on the same page here and you know, getting things taken care of before they get out of control.
Well, and that's honestly how I want my baseball team to handle their business. Is it not? That's exactly what I want from my team. If there's an issue behind closed doors, get it fixed. I don't want it spilling out into the public, as juicy as it may be for content purposes. I want my baseball team to handle their business internally. I do, every time. I don't want to see guys getting chewed out, you know, on the field by each other. I mean, look, things happen. Tensions get hot during the season, but handle your business internally in the clubhouse. What happens in there stays in there. I think everybody's fine with that. As long as you go out and win ball games and give effort, 100%. That's all we ask for.
Now, you know, this was Joe Musgrove talking. And it's not like Joe wasn't there last year and calling team meetings. They called tons of team meetings where they discussed some of the same things last year. And yet it never really turned around until the end of the season. And I'll give you a little preview here, as we do, of one of my roundtable topics later today that we're going to be discussing at 10 o'clock with the whole crew. And that is, clearly, there's something different about the 2024 Padres. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah.
More walk-off wins, more come-from-behind wins, better in close games. To whom or what do you most attribute those positive changes? A lot of the players are the same. You could go right to the manager and say that that's the difference maker, but I don't know that that's necessarily the right answer. Where does this change come from? Because they are winning one-run games. They just won 2 in a row. They are coming from behind. They don't have that look like when they get down 1 or 2-0 that, game's over. Maybe tomorrow's going to be our day. That you felt at times last season with the San Diego Padres that it just wasn't going to go their way on certain days. Way too many of those days last year. So what changed? What changed between 2023 and 2024?
But the manager changed.
The manager did change. We can say this is Mike Schilt's. This is the difference that Mike Schilt has provided.
You can say it.
You can say it. I don't know that that's the right answer, but that's certainly one of the places you can go.
They're 2 games over 500.
You can say Juan Soto is gone.
Right.
I don't know that that's even remotely correct, but that is a difference between last year's team and this year's team.
I think you've added Jerickson Profar for an entire, from spring training.
That's definitely one of the possible answers here as well.
When they added him, they played much better. It's inexplicable to me, other than he's just having a really good season, and he's a really, really good glue guy, and he really loves playing here in San Diego, and he really loves the skipper. I think all the guys do. I was out Friday night, Benny, and was with my nephews, and they were getting some autographs and stuff, and I looked over, and they said, "Oh, that's Cronenworth. We really want to meet Cronenworth." I said, "Oh, he'll come by for sure." He was standing at first base. Him and Schilt were talking. I kid you not, 25 minutes just having a conversation. 25 minutes just the two players. And I looked at that and thought, "Yeah, that's different. That's definitely a different look than what I've seen here in the past." And I think credit is due a lot of places. I think when you infuse the team with a talent like Jackson Merrill again, we talked about
I was just going to say, Jackson Merrill, I think, is a viable answer for at least some of the difference between last season and this season.
And that's not uncommon. You see a guy inject some life in, and you know, you got 7-8 guys that have been in the league for 7-8 years. Yeah, man, it's a little bit different when a rookie comes in, starts lighting the world on fire, brings all the energy, and you look and you go, this guy has totally helped re-energize this team. So
Chris says Luis Arraez is 100% the change.
100% been a change.
Contact is a big thing. Contact may not be the most analytically effective way to win baseball games. You know, they'll tell you strikeouts don't hurt you that much as long as you're slugging and hitting home runs. But I think emotionally, you know, having good at-bats that end in line drives, even when they don't pan out, is good for morale on the team. I think the morale of teams that wait around for home runs can suffer, especially on the days when they don't come, because they're not going to come every day.
They just kind of recently arrived here.
Ten games in a row with a home run out of the blue, after a whole stretch where it looked like they might not hit like 10 more home runs the entire season. They have homered in 10 straight games now.
And you know, obviously time and time together, continuity, all that stuff helps. And
Maria says Suarez just having that guy
stable at
the end of the bullpen.
100%, man. And not saying these are my rules and this is what I want to do. Just having more team kind of oriented guys. And I think there's 9 things we just named. You put all those things together and you have, I mean, again, let's settle down though. It's a team that's 2 games over 500. Like they're not running away with it and shocking the world. They're 2 games over 500. We got to, you know, couch our excitement and enthusiasm. But you can't watch this team this year and say it doesn't feel different. It absolutely does.
I want to go back to the no Juan Soto, because it was not Juan Soto's fault last year. I think there is at least some truth to the thing, though, that when you have Juan Soto on your team, you definitely don't want to be the guy that makes the mistake that doesn't allow Juan Soto to do his thing.
Sure.
So there may have been a little more waiting around, like, okay, let's not press things because we got Juan Soto on our team. But you can't just have that attitude. He's only 1 out of 9 guys in a lineup.
Yeah.
And if you're just waiting around for Juan Soto to save the day, yeah, every once in a while he saves the day, but that's not an effective strategy. Now I think you have a team that 1-9, they all feel like if we don't contribute, we're not going to win. And that actually is probably a good thing for this ball club.
I mean, this is not to be like negative Nelly, but Satan's Blowfish in the chat nails it. It's taken a lot of small miracles and Herculean efforts from certain players to float around 500. Yeah, they've grinded really, really, really hard to be 2 games over 500. And I guess there's some, I respect that, absolutely. You haven't fallen off a cliff when you had every opportunity to do so with injuries and things like that and underperforming from Manny and Tatis early in the season and Xander. My God, I mean, he's right. Herculean. Miracle performances out of some guys early in the season. Nobody expected this from Jackson Merrill. A lot of people were sour on Jake Cronenworth that he could still produce. It has taken a lot of these things to put this team together. And you, again, I enjoy watching this team this year much more than I did last year.
There's also been a couple of really bizarre series like the Rockies and the Angels that have prevented them from being a team that could be 8 or 10 games above 500 right now as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
It works 100%. Both ways.
It really does.
Yeah. They've done a lot of good things to stay around 500, but they also did some really awful things that has prevented them from being right up there with the Dodgers near the top of the division, where they easily could be at this point as well.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I do look at so many games that got away, but I also can't do anything about it. I do like the resolve. I do like the fight. Of course I do. It's such a better, more fun brand of baseball. Do they frustrate the hell out of me some days? Yeah. Did they frustrate the hell out of me yesterday off of that, you know, not overpowering left-hander? Yes, I was massively frustrated. I felt like we left so many opportunities out there. 4 home runs, 6 hits total. Not a great formula, really, for this team and this lineup. You're not going to get that every day. So, yeah, I still want to see a little bit more. I don't think that's a bad thing. But I can't wait to watch this team. Because, really, it's a new hero a lot of the times, Tyler Wade is like almost single-handedly won games for us. He's not on a lot of big league rosters, Benny. You know what I'm saying? Like, Donovan Solano is a pickup. David Peralta had a nice series the last series. Like, it's a different guy every night, and I like that. I like that passing the baton. I like, let me pick my guys up. Wandy didn't have it. Colette comes in and just is incredible, incredible yesterday. So everybody is doing their part. Higgy, you know, having a little resurgence the last week or so with Campy struggling. There's a lot of guys picking each other up. I dig that, man. That's my favorite kind of baseball.
Last year's team, last thought on this, and we'll discuss it more during the roundtable and a bunch of other topics as well. There were a few guys last year who really didn't contribute anything.
Correct.
Matt Carpenter, Nelson Cruz. That you just had guys that were zeros, basically.
Austin Nola, Trent Grisham.
Yeah.
I mean, these are
zeros.
Black holes, dude. Holes.
And this year, it doesn't feel like, you know, Kolek was maybe your zero, and
yeah.
He just came through with his biggest moment
huge way.
Of the season yesterday to help them win that baseball game under the toughest of circumstances.
Literally duress. I mean, it's the most extreme duress you can put a pitcher in. It was such an unheralded moment yesterday with Stephen Kolek. He just incredible. I couldn't believe it.
Whatever it's been, it's been more fun this season.
It really has. Now it's still they're still a tough team to cover because you do see the greatness of them sometimes, and then you watch and you go, oh. And I see it a lot. The same old Padres, shouldn't be surprised, Woodsy. I tweeted yesterday. How do you blow this start from Michael King? How do you as the offense not see what he's doing and go, bro, we got to get our S together right now? And then I got all the responses of, you shouldn't be surprised, it's the Padres. Well, what do? They turn around and they surprise the hell out of all of us. And Jackson Merrill, the rookie center fielder who's a shortstop, hits a walk-off home run against Mason Miller, one of the best in baseball. And here we go again. So it's hard for me to sit and say, same old Padres, when I see stuff like that happening, you know, more often than not.
We got Eno Saris coming up in just a few minutes with more baseball talk. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, give you an update on Tiger Woods after he had an early share of the lead at the U.S. Open. And the guy who's leading now has a San Diego connection. You know I love San Diego connections.
More than anything. It's 8:15. You haven't even brought up Patrick Mahomes yet. I have another question for you. Did you put it on the news last night?
I did not put it on the news.
You lie.
I did not.
Is it because I berated you?
No, I'll explain. I'll explain when we come back.
Just got an update from Adam. He's doing fine. His stomach is upside down, he said. He said brushing his teeth really helped. I didn't think of that because I didn't bring my toothbrush when I did it, and you didn't have yours when
No.
you did it, the Bean Boozled Challenge. If you missed it, you can go back and watch and listen, but it's pretty nasty. Pretty nasty. He put down a good solid 30 to 40 of those things.
Oh.
I mean, and you know, at least half of them were bad. I mean, it was...
Now you should go to the fair and have some funnel cakes.
Oh.
Fried Oreos.
The food
just go all the way.
Yesterday, it's hard, man. It's hard to like not want to try everything there. But it was good. From what I had, was really, really good.
Quick promised update. I mentioned Tiger birdied his first hole today.
Who does this promise to? By the way,
the tees that I promised.
Yeah, but
golf fans?
Oh, okay.
It's the U.S. Open,
right? I know. I like it. I like golf.
This is a tough course. Tiger's bogeyed 5 of his last 8 holes.
That'll do it.
And is falling to 4 over. Now, not the worst. It's Justin Thomas is 6 over.
Wow.
Sahith Theegala is 6 over. Phil Mickelson 7 over. So there's some big scores to be had at Pinehurst number 2. The leader, it's a very tiny San Diego connection, at 5 under through 10 holes is Matthew Pavone, who won the Farmers Insurance Open this year. That's the tiny San Diego connection there for you for your early leader. Second place, Ludvig Åberg, Brooks Koepka, and Russell Henley all at 3 under par right now. Frankie says he'll have another update for us in the Italian Paul Reindl report coming up in our final hour of the program.
Okay.
All right, you mentioned the tweet from Patrick Mahomes yesterday when he was caught on video at Chiefs OTAs at minicamp, kind of doing a wind-up and then throwing kind of a spinless football. And
so
someone asked, like, what is he trying to do out there? And he saw that video and he goes, what was the tweet he said? I'm trying to do that dude from the Padres, Waldron. I want to throw the knuckleball like he does.
Crazy.
And he tweeted that out. And Matt Waldron actually was asked for his reaction after the game yesterday. And he's like, this is like a surreal universe. Matt Waldron grew up Omaha. He is a Chiefs fan. And he said, like, to have Patrick Mahomes tweeting about me is surreal.
That's nuts.
It's surreal.
That's nuts. The Pitching Ninja, of course he did. He put them side by side. He had Matty Waldron throwing the knuckleball and Patrick Mahomes throwing his version of the football knuckleball. And listen, I know I always bust balls about, like, how excited we get when any... Oh, Young Gravy was wearing a Padres hat, and everyone's like, ugh. But I'm gonna give you this one, because Patrick Mahomes is a massive, massive name. When he name checks one of your starting pitchers and his pitch that nobody else throws in the big leagues, Benny, that's pretty cool. Pretty cool moment.
And remember, of course, yeah, his dad pitched in the big leagues. Patrick Mahomes was a baseball player at Texas Tech as well.
Now, my question, I texted.
So he follows baseball.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure Pitching Ninja, he probably sees the tweets, the Waldron.
He just retweeted Pitching Ninja and said, nasty. Yep. I love it. I thought that was pretty cool. Now, I asked you, local sports guy, but on the local news, which, I mean, nobody loves anything more than local news. When a mention of your town is mentioned, you got to run with it and make it a big story. You did not.
I did not.
Was it because of my berating in the text?
It was not.
A little bit.
Not really.
I wanted some credit on that one.
I mean, you made me think twice a little bit. Ultimately, the decision is, it's a little different. In TV, I can't just... So the guy who shot the video was like a Chiefs reporter. I can't just steal his video and put it on television.
Can you not?
I could go, I could
can
like...
Can you credit him?
I could email him and like see if I can find him. Like, who is he? And request permission. Can we use that with a courtesy?
Sure.
But in terms of, I already had the longest, my Padres highlights went on for over a minute yesterday, and I wanted to have Jackson Merrill reaction and Mike Schilt reaction.
You had plenty of content.
By the time I was done, I didn't have any time left to add anything else to go on a giant mission to see if I could get, you know, permission for this video from this guy who had shot it of Patrick Mahomes. So I ended up not including it.
Now, you know Pitching Ninja. We know him.
I do.
You probably could have used his.
He also just stole. I mean, it's a little different. It's just the internet. He also stole that guy's video. So
that's fair.
It's just because he did it doesn't mean I can then just go ahead and do it as well on television. So
Okay. Yeah, there's credit that needs to be doled out.
Correct.
Interesting.
Correct.
It was cool. It was a cool moment.
I thought it was.
And again, it's not.
I didn't know Waldron was a Chiefs fan yesterday.
That's what makes it cooler. And I thought about it in our own terms, right? Like Howard Stern. Hey, this guy's really talented. That'd be it for me. I mean, I'd lose my mind.
Just the fact that they like know
who
I am and that I exist.
I'm the fifth starter for the San Diego Padres. You're the multiple Super Bowl winning quarterback, world famous Patrick Mahomes, and you know who I am? Staggeringly cool. So good for Matty Waldron. And the fact that he's a fan is awesome. That's awesome. That's a pretty surreal moment in what has got to be a year of surreal moments for Matt Waldron.
And then I also thought there may have been a hint of truth to that Patrick Mahomes, for some reason, is going to break out a knuckleball pass during a game. Because if there was one quarterback who was going to throw a weird...
I feel like he's done it, actually.
Knuckleball. I mean, he's done the behind the back.
And he's done, like, the shovel pass that doesn't move.
Yeah, he's done sort of things. So he may have a wind-up pass coming out. Like, woo! Shotgun goes into the wind-up.
The defender just whiffs right over the top of it. Pretty cool. Pretty, pretty cool.
All right, let's take a timeout. When we come back, we can talk a little bit more about movement and pitch and stuff, plus with our friend Eno Saris. Our weekly Smart Baseball segment is coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Our pal Eno Saris took note of that Patrick Mahomes tweet yesterday as well.
Pretty cool.
Which was cool. We were just talking about that with Matt Waldron, the knuckleball, acknowledging what has been one of the cooler stories around the San Diego Padres this year. We got Eno standing by for our Smart Baseball segment. First, this hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by the Farmer's Dog. From a healthier weight to more energy, when you switch your dog's food to the Farmer's Dog, the effects can feel magical. What sorcery is this? None at all. It's just real food made for the health of dogs. Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/radio. Eno coming up right after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.3.
Good job by Frank, filling in for Paulie, finding that open at the last second, because we can't talk to Eno Saris without his his walk-up music. Good morning, Eno. How are you?
I'm doing good. I thought you guys changed me to Stone Temple Pilots for a second.
No. That's just the bumper music coming back from break. I mean, you can do worse than Stone Temple Pilots. You know, I liked your tweet last night. You tweeted, took my kids to the bar because I've made it this far into the week without my better half. I'm going to play some pool. Now, I was reading it and I thought, were you like, these kids are wearing me out. I'm sticking them in a seat and I'm going to go play some pool by myself. Or were you actually playing with your kids?
I played with them. I did beat them.
Okay, yeah. I mean, good. Yeah, I was watching something the other day. It was Adam Major was making his major league debut for the San Diego Padres on the mound, and they were talking to his dad, and he's got two brothers, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I never let him win at anything." And I look over at my son, who's six, and I'm like, "You see, this is why I will stuff you when you try to go to the hole. This is why I will rain threes down upon you. This is why I will dunk on you, because you too can be a big league ball player." So I like that mentality.
Yeah. My boys are pretty competitive with each other too. The younger one cannot lose.
Oh yeah,
he will cheat, change the rules, do whatever it takes.
It's the best, dude. Mine are the same way. It's so good. I love it, man. Well, you know, I guess we could go in the Adam Major direction, but I did want to talk about maybe the Matt Waldron direction is probably a more topical one for you. I know that you along with us and everybody else remain pretty impressed with what he's done. And I was at the game Friday, you know, and I was talking to Ruben Niebla, and I was interrupted, and I did not care, by Tom Candiotti, who came over to talk to Ruben about Matt Waldron's knuckleball. And I heard Ruben Niebla say, first time I've ever coached a guy that throws it. It is really, still remains this huge enigma in baseball, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, where everybody else is chasing spin, the knuckleballer wants to basically kill the spin. He wants to have, you know, like one rotation on the way to the plate. Another thing that's interesting about the knuckleball is that it's a random number generator. It just it makes different shapes every time you throw it. And so as a batter, you know, you could tell this is a knuckleball, and yet it might move like a big curveball, or it might move like a changeup, a power changeup. It can move like any other pitch in baseball, and you just don't know which one it's going to be.
One thing that makes me laugh is when the umpire does the big sticky stuff check on Matt Waldron as he's coming off the mound, because, of course, that sticky stuff would ruin his knuckleball if he had anything on his fingers.
Terrible.
It would destroy the pitch.
Yeah. I have heard from the pitchers that they would like to use sticky stuff for a specific pitch. And so, you know, he could still be using it for a breaking ball or something, but, you know, it can't be the old style sticky stuff, the spider tack, because you can't get that off between pitches. So it would have to be just something smaller, like pine tar or something. But even that, I think we're getting close to getting it out of the game. I don't think there's a lot of it going on.
Well, yeah, because he will, and that's, I think, you know, we've talked about Kyle Higashioka and what an unenviable job he's been tasked with is, hey, welcome to a new team on a new coast with new team.
Catching
the knuckleballer. Oh, but also you don't get to use the big floppy mitt because he'll also throw, you know, 93 mile an hour fastball and a slider and all that stuff. And it's an unenviable task for Higgy. And I think he's done a pretty good job at, you know, handling it so far.
Yeah, I mean, I remember there was the big, what was the thing that happened with, I think it was between Boston and San Diego, they traded
Mirabelli.
Doug Mirabelli, and then they had a start where the guy that they had couldn't catch Wakefield.
Yep.
And so they asked for Doug Mirabelli back.
Mirabelli was also miserable.
He hated it here. He did not want to be here.
Hated it here. I don't know if I've ever seen a player that's hated San Diego more than Doug Mirabelli. Hated being in San Diego. He just missed Boston from the second he got here. That didn't work out well for either side. So, Eno, we were dreading all series. And the A's are finally going to unleash Ursig and Miller on the Padres, and they didn't see him in the first two games. And, of course, the way baseball works, Padres, you know, homer off both
got
of them.
Both.
Get the walk-off. Now, Miller's fastball is electric, but Jackson Merrill got him on the slider. Now, the slider's pretty good, too, but it was a nice piece of hitting just to see that. But it's the phenomenon of getting beat on your your second best pitch, I guess, has got to be always a regret for any pitcher, especially a reliever.
Yeah, but the more you throw any one pitch, the more the hitter gets used to the shape of that pitch. And so, you know, especially if you face a team, was that the first time Miller
First time.
He could have just broken out that fast.
I mean, Suarez throws it 70 times in a row and doesn't seem to hurt him. So, you know,
but in a postseason series, I would tell Suarez, you know, by the second or third time that he sees, you know, the Dodgers or whatever, to mix it up too. So I guess, you know, I've seen that Mason Miller's throwing a slinker now, a 97-mile-an-hour splitter, and he's just trying to mix it up. And basically, you know, what pitchers tell me is hitters are so good, like, you know, I need to do everything. I need to throw as hard as I can. The shapes need to all be good, and I need to have, you know, two different fastballs, and I need to have two different breaking balls, you know. So they're just trying to do everything.
You know, that's been a lot of the philosophy of Ruben Niebla. Every single pitcher pretty much who arrives, he wants them to develop a new pitch. A lot of them are sweepers, but they've been other things as well. And, you know, I think Yu Darvish kind of sets the tone a little bit with his whatever 11-pitch mix that he throws. But, you know, Dylan Cease, you know, great pitcher comes in. They want to work on adding a pitch as soon as he gets there. And from what you're saying, you know, it sounds like that's a positive development and a strategy we're going to be seeing more in Major League Baseball.
Well, for one, it's been proven that the more pitches you have, the softer your third time through the order penalty is. So, you know, you're more likely to turn the lineup over if you have more pitches. And then on top of that, what we're seeing today, you know, one hitting coach told me that having multiple fastballs is a cheat code for pitchers. And it's because, and I just asked Mitch Haniger about this the other day, and he said, if I put the four-seam fastball swing on a pitch and it's a two-seamer, I'm pounding that thing into the ground. Yep. It's an easy out. So, you know, now what you're seeing is, and I'm stealing from a piece that I'm working on right now with Jason Stark about where did all the offense go. But the number of pitchers with two fastballs is up around 30%, and the number of pitches with three fastballs is up 40% from 3 years ago. So whatever that hitting coach was on to, the league figured it out pretty quickly. And so now you see the Dodgers, half of them are adding sinkers. George Kirby and the Mariners, they're adding sinkers. You know, they all have good four seams. And it used to be only throw good pitches. Now it's, well, you know, throw good pitches, throw your best pitches, but if you can put a wrinkle on it, you know, if you throw a cutter when they're expecting a four-seam, or you throw a sinker when they're expecting a four-seam, they won't make good contact.
It's just mind-numbing to think about. it really is. I mean, you're amazed that these guys ever get a barrel on a baseball sometimes.
Yeah, Michael King did it yesterday where he's got the tighter slider breaking ball and then a slightly less tight one that he kind of mixes back and forth.
Well, and Michael King is actually the direction. We're talking to Eno Saris here on Ben and Woods this morning. Michael King is the direction that I wanted to take it. I'm telling you, I watch this guy sometimes, Eno, and I go, it's some of the nastiest stuff in the league. And where does he rank with you, stuff plus-wise? Because when I watch that 22-inch run two-seamer that he starts on the lefties, you know, he's on the right, the right-handers are like, oh, it's a ball. And it just, whoop, right down the middle. Nasty, nasty when he's done it. And he's had some really remarkable outings.
But the lefties, when it's going right at their hip. And they're like getting out of the way, and it catches the inside corner.
It's insane to me.
Oh, the front door two-seamer is my favorite pitch in baseball.
Mine too.
And I just love it because the hitter's frozen. The hitter doesn't do anything, and he's just hapless. He watches the ball go into the strike zone. I just love that pitch. But, yeah, his sinker ranks well. My model doesn't really love sinkers, so, you know, that's one asterisk. But his breaking ball, you got that one pegged. I think among starters, it's like a top three slider among starters. It's one of the best sliders in the big leagues. And one thing that you'll find with guys who have an elite pitch like that and feel for spin like he does, but like a Sonny Gray does, what happens is that they almost have infinite breaking balls at some point, you know? It's not just, oh, the sweeper. It's like, well, there's the harder sweeper, and then there's the bigger sweeper, and then there's actually the one that's almost not even a sweeper, you know? And he really has that feel for the breaking ball where it can be as many different pitches as he wants it to be. That's what he builds everything around, I think. The sinker is plus, but it used to be 96. It used to be, you know, plus plus. And the four seam is not that great, but it's with the changeup, it's enough to keep lefties off balance.
Talking to Eno Saris from The Athletic with us here, our weekly Smart Baseball segment. And I see on your Athletic Rates and Barrels podcast, you had our friend Katie Wu on, and you guys discussed the Athletic's poll, the anonymous player poll. We discussed it earlier this week with best player, overrated players. What were some of your guys' takeaways on what players thought about the sport themselves?
Also, name some of those anonymous players. That'd be good to do on the air. Yeah, if you could.
Well, there was the hilarious one where someone put Juan Soto on the overrated
list. Yeah, so good.
Which I was like, okay, he's like a top three hitter in the big leagues over the last 3 years. But they said, well, you know, he only hits singles, and he doesn't play good defense. And we were like, well, yeah, he doesn't play great defense, but he does hit more than singles.
He does. He does.
There was I thought the overrated question was really unfair in general because I just think it's really hard because what's the rating? You know, like, who's rating? What do you mean overrated? I never know. Like, if you show me a list of players and say who's out of order, then I can say, oh, you know, that guy's not number one. You've shown me the rating. But if you just say who's the most overrated player, I think it ends up being like, who do I not like?
Yeah, who do the guys I hate the most? And like,
why do they hate Jazz Chisholm so much?
Right,
then?
Exactly. Like, why do they hate Jazz Chisholm? Right. It makes no sense.
I think some of it must be, like, batting average oriented because the only thing that Jazz doesn't do that well is batting average. And, I mean, he does pimp his homers, but he hits some homers. He's a good player. He's a center fielder with power. I don't know.
Tony Gwynn Jr. actually made a good point. He said, it's jealousy because they put Jazz on the cover of MLB The Show, and they felt like other players deserve that more. So thus, Jazz is overrated because he got to be on the cover.
It didn't have a good year.
It didn't have a great year. So there it is. You know, right there.
Vlady Jr. didn't get any votes.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, Vlady Jr. is the newest one, but I guess maybe he has a better batting average. So I mean, some of these things were interesting. Also, like, where would you play? And they said without rosters, without state taxes at play, like, where would you just like to play? And everybody said the Braves. San Diego was pretty high up on there. But my theory was that, you know, a place like San Francisco, if they did that poll in 2015, coming off of, you know, off of the championships, right? That even if the question says, don't think about rosters, people would be like, oh, I'd love to play in San Francisco. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
I feel like the winners were near the top, too. You know, they tried to be like, don't think about winning, but winning teams were near the top of that list.
Well, it's weird to me that they would pick Atlanta, too, because they know that they, like, you can go to Atlanta where you could get 10 for 300. They're going to sign you 10 for 220, and you're going to take it because it's in Atlanta. And I don't know, like, they've done a really good job, but, you know, they're scuffling a little bit right now. Yeah, I love that poll every year. I think it's such great fodder. And it's fun to hear from the players, even though they don't put their name on it. And they shouldn't. They should not put their name on those quotes because some of them would be made to look very foolish, my friend.
Especially the overrated
one. Yeah, especially the overrated one, for sure.
That would start some serious some strife, I think.
Yeah, some bean balls and whatnot, yes.
Well, one that, you know, they asked them, like, is the season too long? But the way that they asked it was, is Anthony Rendon right that the season is
correct?
And I was like, you poisoned that question.
Yeah, nobody wants to side with him.
Nobody wants to agree with Anthony Rendon.
So good, man. So
when he got put in on the overrated list, I was like, that makes no sense because nobody thinks he's any good.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's not even fair. Eno, we are out of time. As always, great stuff. We will talk to you again next Thursday. Have a great week, man.
Thanks for having me.
Our Smart Baseball segment with Eno Saris brought to you by 7 Mile Casino. Eno with his great stuff at The Athletic. You can follow him on social media and make sure you're keeping up with all of his. I'm looking forward to Jason Stark, Eno teaming up. Where has the offense gone?
Love it.
In baseball?
It's, you know, Eno, there's people on The Athletic, man. Dennis Lynn, Eno Saris, Katie Wu. That's why you subscribe to The Athletic. They're brilliant.
All right, we will come back. We got 1 hour before the roundtable begins. Italian Paul going to give us his version of the Rindle Report with some headlines.
There he is.
Coming up next. I don't see any Formula One on here today. What's going on? Is everything okay with you, Frankie? But we do have some hot dog eating updates for you coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan. Our pal Eno Saris took note of that Patrick Mahomes tweet yesterday as well.
Pretty cool.
Which was cool. We were just talking about that with Matt Waldron, the knuckleball, acknowledging what has been one of the cooler stories around the San Diego Padres this year. We got Eno standing by for our Smart Baseball segment. First, this hour on 97.3 The Fan is brought to you by the Farmer's Dog. From a healthier weight to more energy, when you switch your dog's food to the Farmer's Dog, the effects can feel magical. What sorcery is this? None at all. It's just real food made for the health of dogs. Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/radio. Eno, coming up right after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan.
It's time for the super polished, yet to be named Smart Baseball Weekly segment with Eno Harris. Saris, son of a bitch. Brought to you by 7 Mile Casino, just 7 minutes from the ballpark, by the bay in Chula Vista. Here's Eno Saris with Ben and Woods on 97.
Good job by Frank, filling in for Paulie, finding that open at the last second, because we can't talk to Eno Saris without his his walk-up music. Good morning, Eno. How are you?
I'm doing good. I thought you guys changed me to Stone Temple Pilots for a second.
No. That's just the bumper music coming back from break. I mean, you can do worse than Stone Temple Pilots. You know, I liked your tweet last night. You tweeted, took my kids to the bar because I've made it this far into the week without my better half. I'm going to play some pool. Now, I was reading it and I thought, were you like, these kids are wearing me out. I'm sticking them in a seat and I'm going to go play some pool by myself. Or were you actually playing with your kids?
I played with them. I did beat them.
Okay, yeah. I mean, good. Yeah, I was watching something the other day. It was Adam Major was making his major league debut for the San Diego Padres on the mound, and they were talking to his dad, and he's got two brothers, and he goes, "Oh yeah, I never let him win at anything." And I look over at my son, who's six, and I'm like, "You see, this is why I will stuff you when you try to go to the hole. This is why I will rain threes down upon you. This is why I will dunk on you, because you too can be a big league ball player." So I like that mentality.
Yeah. My boys are pretty competitive with each other too. The younger one cannot lose.
Oh yeah,
he will cheat, change the rules, do whatever it takes.
It's the best, dude. Mine are the same way. It's so good. I love it, man. Well, you know, I guess we could go in the Adam Major direction, but I did want to talk about maybe the Matt Waldron direction is probably a more topical one for you. I know that you along with us and everybody else remain pretty impressed with what he's done. And I was at the game Friday, you know, and I was talking to Ruben Niebla, and I was interrupted, and I did not care, by Tom Candiotti, who came over to talk to Ruben about Matt Waldron's knuckleball. And I heard Ruben Niebla say, first time I've ever coached a guy that throws it. It is really, still remains this huge enigma in baseball, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, where everybody else is chasing spin, the knuckleballer wants to basically kill the spin. He wants to have, you know, like one rotation on the way to the plate. Another thing that's interesting about the knuckleball is that it's a random number generator. It just it makes different shapes every time you throw it. And so as a batter, you know, you could tell this is a knuckleball, and yet it might move like a big curveball, or it might move like a changeup, a power changeup. It can move like any other pitch in baseball, and you just don't know which one it's going to be.
One thing that makes me laugh is when the umpire does the big sticky stuff check on Matt Waldron as he's coming off the mound, because, of course, that sticky stuff would ruin his knuckleball if he had anything on his fingers.
Terrible.
It would destroy the pitch.
Yeah. I have heard from the pitchers that they would like to use sticky stuff for a specific pitch. And so, you know, he could still be using it for a breaking ball or something, but, you know, it can't be the old style sticky stuff, the spider tack, because you can't get that off between pitches. So it would have to be just something smaller, like pine tar or something. But even that, I think we're getting close to getting it out of the game. I don't think there's a lot of it going on.
Well, yeah, because he, you know, he will, and that's, I think, you know, we've talked about Kyle Higashioka and what a an unenviable job he's been tasked with is, hey, welcome to a new team in, on a new coast with new team.
Catching
the knuckleballer. Oh, but also you don't get to use the big floppy mitt because he'll also throw, you know, 93 mile an hour fastball and a slider and all that stuff. And it's an unenviable task for Higgy. And I think he's done a pretty good job at, you know, handling it so far.
Yeah, I mean, I remember there was the big, what was the thing that happened? I think it was between Boston and San Diego. They traded
Mirabelli.
Doug Mirabelli, and then they had a start where the guy that they had couldn't catch Wakefield.
Yep.
And so they asked for Doug Mirabelli back.
Mirabelli was also miserable.
He hated it here. He did not want to be here.
Hated it here. I don't know if I've ever seen a player that's hated San Diego more than Doug Mirabelli. Hated being in San Diego. He just missed Boston from the second he got here. That didn't work out well for either side. So, Eno, we were dreading all series. And the A's are finally going to unleash Ursig and Miller on the Padres, and they didn't see him in the first two games. And, of course, the way baseball works, Padres, you know, homer off both
got
of them.
Both.
Get the walk-off. Now, Miller's fastball is electric, but Jackson Merrill got him on the slider. Now, the slider's pretty good, too, but it was a nice piece of hitting just to see that. But it's the phenomenon of getting beat on your second-best pitch, I guess, has got to be always a regret for any pitcher, especially a reliever.
Yeah, but the more you throw any one pitch, the more the hitter gets used to the shape of that pitch. And so, you know, especially if you face a team I don't know. Was that the first time Miller?
First time.
Yeah. Okay. He could have just broken out that fast.
I mean, Suarez throws it 70 times in a row and doesn't seem to hurt him. So you know.
But in a postseason series, I would tell Suarez, you know, by the second or third time that he sees, you know, the Dodgers or whatever, to mix it up too. So I guess, you know, I've seen that Mason Miller's throwing a splinker now, a 97 mile an hour splitter. And he's just trying to mix it up. And basically, you know, what pitchers tell me is hitters are so good, like, you know, I need to do everything. I need to throw as hard as I can. The shapes need to all be good. And I need to have, you know, two different fastballs. And I need to have two different breaking balls, you know. So they're just trying to do everything.
You know, that's been a lot of the philosophy of Ruben Niebla. Every single pitcher pretty much who arrives, he wants them to develop a new pitch. A lot of them are sweepers, but they've been other things as well. And you know, I think Yu Darvish kind of sets the tone a little bit with his whatever 11 pitch mix that he throws. But you know, Dylan Cease, you know, great pitcher comes in. They want to work on adding a pitch as soon as he gets there. And from what you're saying, you know, it sounds like that's a positive development and a strategy we're going to be seeing more in Major League Baseball.
Well, for one, it's been proven that the more pitches you have, the softer your third time through the order penalty is. So, you know, you're more likely to turn the lineup over if you have more pitches. And then on top of that, what we're seeing today, you know, one hitting coach told me that having multiple fastballs is a cheat code for pitchers. And it's because, and I just asked Mitch Haniger about this the other day, and he said, if I put the four-seam fastball swing on a pitch, and it's a two-seamer, I'm pounding that thing into the ground. Yep. It's an easy out. So, you know, now what you're seeing is, and I'm stealing from a piece that I'm working on right now with Jason Stark about where did all the offense go. But the number of pitchers with two fastballs is up around 30%, and the number of pitches with three fastballs is up 40% from 3 years ago. So whatever that hitting coach was on to, the league figured it out pretty quickly. And so now you see the Dodgers, half of them are adding sinkers. George Kirby and the Mariners, they're adding sinkers. You know, they all have good four seams. And it used to be only throw good pitches. Now it's, well, you know, throw good pitches, throw your best pitches. But if you can put a wrinkle on it, you know, if you throw a cutter when they're expecting a four seam or you throw a sinker when they're expecting a four seam, they won't make good contact.
It's just mind numbing to think about. It really is. I mean, you're amazed that these guys ever get a barrel on a baseball sometimes.
Yeah, Michael King did it yesterday where he's got the tighter tighter slider breaking ball and then a slightly less tight one that he kind of mixes back and forth.
Well, and Michael King is actually the direction. We're talking to Eno Saris here on Ben and Woods this morning. Michael King is the direction that I wanted to take it. I'm telling you, I watch this guy sometimes, Eno, and I go, it's some of the nastiest stuff in the league. And where does he rank with you, stuff plus-wise? Because when I watch that 22-inch run two-seamer that he starts on the lefties, you know, he's on the right, the right-handers are like, oh, it's a ball. And it just, whoop, right down the middle. Nasty, nasty when he's done it. And he's had some really remarkable outings.
But the lefties, when it's going right,
the lefties,
right,
at their hip.
And they're like getting out of the way, and it catches the inside corner.
It's insane to me.
Oh, the front door two-seamer is my favorite pitch in baseball.
Mine too.
And I just love it because the hitter's frozen. The hitter doesn't do anything, and he's just hapless. He watches the ball go into the strike zone. I just love that pitch. But, yeah, his sinker ranks well. My model doesn't really love sinkers, so, you know, that's one asterisk. But his breaking ball, you got that one pegged. I think among starters, it's like a top three slider among starters. It's one of the best sliders in the big leagues. And one thing that you'll find with guys who have an elite pitch like that and feel for spin like he does, like a Sonny Gray does, what happens is that they almost have infinite breaking balls at some point, you know? It's not just, oh, the sweeper. It's like, well, there's the harder sweeper, and then there's the bigger sweeper, and then there's actually the one that's almost not even a sweeper, you know? And he really has that feel for the breaking ball where it can be as many different pitches as he wants it to be. That's what he builds everything around, I think. The sinker is plus, but it used to be 96. It used to be, you know, plus plus. And the four seam is not that great, but it's with the changeup, it's enough to keep lefties off balance.
Talking to Eno Saris from The Athletic with us here, our weekly Smart Baseball segment. And I see on your Athletic Rates and Barrels podcast, you had our friend Katie Wu on, and you guys discussed the Athletic's poll, the anonymous player poll. We discussed it earlier this week with best player, overrated players. What were some of your guys' takeaways on what players thought about the sport themselves?
Also, name some of those anonymous players. That'd be good to do on the air. Yeah, if you could.
Well, there was the hilarious one where someone put Juan Soto on the overrated
list. Yeah, so good.
Which I was like, okay, he's like a top three hitter in the big leagues over the last 3 years. But they said, well, you know, he only hits singles, and he doesn't play good defense. And we were like, well, yeah, he doesn't play great defense, but he does hit more than singles.
He does.
So,
he does.
There was. I thought the overrated question was really unfair in general, because I just think it's really hard. Because you, what's the rating? You know, like who's rating? What do you mean overrated? I never know. Like if you show me a list of players and say who's out of order, then I can say, oh, you know, that guy's not number one. You've shown me the rating. But if you just say who's the most overrated player, I think it ends up being like, who do I not like?
Yeah, who do the guys I hate the most? And like,
why do they hate Jazz Chisholm so much?
Right,
then?
Exactly. Like, why do they hate Jazz Chisholm? Right. It makes no sense.
I think some of it must be, like, batting average oriented, because the only thing that Jazz doesn't do that well is batting average. And, I mean, he does pimp his homers, but he hits some homers. He's a good player. He's a center fielder with power. I don't know. Like,
Tony Gwynn Jr. actually made a good point. He said, it's jealousy because they put Jazz on the cover of MLB The Show, and they felt like other players deserve that more. So thus, Jazz is overrated because he got to be on the cover.
It didn't have a good year.
It didn't have a great year. So there it is. You know, right there.
Vladdy Jr. didn't get any votes.
That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know, Vladdy Jr. is the newest one, but I guess maybe he has a better batting average. So I mean, some of these things were interesting. Also, like, where would you play? And they said without rosters, without state taxes at play, like where would you just like to play? And everybody said the Braves. San Diego was pretty high up on there. But my theory was that, you know, a place like San Francisco, if they did that poll in 2015, coming off of, you know, off of the championships, right? That even if the question says, don't think about rosters, people would be like, oh, I'd love to play in San Francisco. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course.
I feel like the winners were near the top, too. You know, they tried to be like, don't think about winning, but winning teams were near the top of that list.
Well, it's weird to me that they would pick Atlanta, too, because they know that they, like, you can go to Atlanta where you could get 10 for 300. They're going to sign you 10 for 220, and you're going to take it because it's in Atlanta. And I don't know, like, they've done a really good job, but. You know, they're scuffling a little bit right now. Yeah, I love that poll every year. I think it's such great fodder. And it's fun to hear from the players, even though they don't put their name on it. And they shouldn't. They should not put their name on those quotes because some of them would be made to look very foolish, my friend.
Especially the overrated
one. Yeah, especially the overrated one, for sure.
That would start some serious some strife, I think.
Yeah, some bean balls and whatnot, yes.
Well, one you know, they asked them, like, is the season too long? But the way that they asked it was, is Anthony Rendon right that the season is
correct?
And I was like, you poisoned that question.
Yeah, nobody wants to side with him.
Nobody wants to agree with Anthony Rendon.
So good, man. So
when he got put in on the overrated list, I was like, that makes no sense because nobody thinks he's any good.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's not even fair. Eno, we are out of time. As always, great stuff. We will talk to you again next Thursday. Have a great week, man.
Thanks for having me.
Our Smart Baseball segment with Eno Saris, brought to you by 7 Mile Casino. Eno with his great stuff at The Athletic. You can follow him on social media and make sure you're keeping up with all of his. I'm looking forward to Jason Stark, Eno teaming up. Where has the offense gone?
Love it.
In baseball?
It's, you know, Eno, there's people on The Athletic, man. Dennis Lynn, Eno Saris, Katie Wu. That's why you subscribe to The Athletic. They're brilliant.
All right, we will come back. We got 1 hour before the roundtable begins. Italian Paul going to give us his version of the Rindle Report with some headlines.
There he is.
Coming up next. I don't see any Formula One on here today. What's going on? Is everything okay with you, Frankie? But we do have some hot dog eating updates for you coming up next here on 97.3 The Fan.